Welcome to Playing with Fire, the podcast for people who are ready to custom build their love.
We're talking about non-monogamy, however you design it, as an individuation opportunity.
Want to leave the default and make your life spectacularly you? You're in the right place.
Hello. So today, let's talk about attachment style. Is like it's everywhere. At least in our world, it comes up so much.
It does. I mean, it comes up in our personal world, and it also, you can't scroll on Instagram for two posts without seeing something about attachment style these days, it seems.
And so,
is there such a thing as attachment talk? There might be.
Hashtag attachment talk. Yeah, could be. In this case, we're going to add it to the list of things to talk about in the context of non-monogamy.
Well, I mean, I feel like in some ways this conversation then, it follows on the heels of us having interviewed Jessica Fearn, who writes about attachment theory and non-monogamy in the book Polysecure. We've interviewed Jessica and then Jessica and David, who wrote Polywise together several times. So it's interesting now to be taking this on as a separate topic after having done those interviews. But I love the topic of attachment because I think that it is extremely educational for us to sit with rather than just take it as like outside information. Is that like somebody telling
this you
is
your,
how, this I think is this is something
style.
To really sit and ponder.
Uh-huh. And I think that there's a reason that it's in the air a lot. There's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to think about.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what it is. What are we talking about?
Well,
attachment style.
So the words attachment style, that's the common way that people talk about attachment theory. But if we want to back out a layer and say attachment theory, it grew out of the theories of psychodynamic research back in the very late 60s, primarily the 70s, the 80s, and then it really started to pick up steam, and attachment theory has been a huge part of the relational world since the early to mid 2000s decade. If you are working with someone who is taking attachment theory seriously, then they probably feel pretty strongly that attachment theory can explain a lot of our relational trauma, and that attachment theory can help us understand why our patterns are the way they are and why our partners behave in ways that they do that may seem absolutely insane to you. So attachment theory is great because it helps us see more with more clarity how very different we can be from each other.
Okay. So the theory helps us understand each other, gives us another tool for understanding each other and ourselves.
Right. So I like the definition. There was a study put out by Katz and Katz in 2021, and they just have a nice simple definition. Attachment is the communication of physical safety through proximity and protection provided by an attachment figure. Now, when we're talking about attachment theory, it's important to note that we're talking about a theory that was developed to research and look at the connection between an infant and their caregiver. And then later, quite a bit later, we took and applied attachment theory to adult romantic relationships. There's an argument to be made that we don't have enough data yet to just neatly say that whatever attachment theory can tell us about how we exist necessarily just lays onto our romantic relationships. Where I know some of my colleagues are, you know, they are deeply committed to that idea, to the idea that our relationships are just another place where our attachment patterns play out, and we should treat all relationships as attachment-based relationships because that's how we build healthy romantic relationships. I'm hesitant to do that because I really believe that we need to be thoughtful about what our relationships are for and actually engage with the conversation of, hey, are we building an attachment-based relationship? Because I'm not sure everybody is available for that. And in the context of non-monogamy, we are often getting reflective about what it is that we're looking for in our relationships. And not all relationships really are for that, right?
That's, so, okay, that's That's interesting. I was thinking in terms of what I've been reading, I kind of get the sense that it kind of makes sense. It has a certain amount of truthiness that our attachment tendencies as infants, our attachment styles back then, might have a notable correlation to the way we enter relationships as adults.
Right. And we have data that supports that.
Yeah. And so, okay, good. That's useful information to have and to look into. But yeah, what you're saying is, okay, great. But what is the kind of relationship that we're having with this person or these people? I mean, I have plenty of people in my life who I don't look to for emotional or physical safety. That's not the relationship I have.
Right.
And so if I'm dating, I mean, certainly early on in the dating process, that's not where we are, unless you're Ted Mosby.
Did you just rewatch How I Met Your Mother? Yeah. Ted's going all in early.
Yeah.
I appreciate just taking this subtlety, like applying some subtlety to whether we are looking for our relationships. And let's extend this beyond romantic. Are we looking for our friendships to be attachment-based? I have negotiated with people around, hey, is this friendship one that we are looking to build an attachment basis? Like, are we looking to be figures where each other can find a safe haven? Are we looking to be present for each other that way? And some of my friends have been like, hell yes. Yeah, let's do that. And some of them are like, no, I don't want to build that into my worldview right now, either because they're feeling tapped out, they just don't have the bandwidth, or because they're not ready right now to commit that level of connection.
Yeah, it's not a small thing to take seriously volunteering to be an attachment figure for someone else. Even like, and there are levels to which you can put boundaries on it, absolutely, but still taking it seriously, that gets you into a certain amount of emotional energy expenditure.
Right. So the question that I find people ask me most frequently is, you know, they'll have taken an online quiz somewhere that tells them that they have, say, an anxious, preoccupied attachment style, or they have an avoidant, dismissive attachment style, or they have a disorganized, which means kind of a mix of both. You're kind of playing at both ends of that spectrum, avoidant and anxious, attachment style. If they get anything other than secure, the fourth one, often their question is, can I even do non-monogamy? Like, how is this going to work for me? And the presumption is frequently that people who are more avoidant would actually have an easier time of it. But the little bit of data we have on who is doing non-monogamy that actually looks at what's going on in their attachment tendencies actually doesn't point to that. The little bit of data we do have points to the fact that people who tend more into the anxious realm, actually, they have a higher desire for more connection. And so they may actually choose non-monogamy more frequently. That doesn't mean it's necessarily easier for them. But whenever somebody says to me, oh, I have disorganized attachment style, or I have an avoidant attachment style, I don't know whether I can do this, I think, well, that doesn't actually give me enough information. I don't want anybody to decide that because of your attachment label, you can't do a particular relationship style, because that's not contextualized into the whole of you. You're a whole person.
Yeah.
And we're all resourced differently. We all have different communities around us. We all want different things out of our relationships. And we're all willing to put in different amounts of effort into dealing with the discomfort of, oh, my attachment tendency makes this like uncomfortable. Can I resource myself? Can I be present to that? Yeah. Can I do the work? Can I learn how to create agreements and stay in agreements? And can I learn how to create repair? Can I learn how to be in connection even when I need space? If you can do those things, then whatever label that quiz gave you is far less important than whether you're willing to put in the effortful attention to your relationships.
You painted a nice complex picture of how our, well, what I hear you coming down to is, what kind of energy do you want to expend in this relationship? And that there's no like external objective measure for that. It's going to be an internal perception of how much energy, effort that you're putting in. And also, you know, you and I are different people. You have a PhD. I watched you study. I watched you doing, you know, your higher education for decades, and you've spent a lot of time learning about this stuff in detail. And I've also watched you having relationships and really throwing yourself into them. I've been learning about relationships and things like attachment theory, and it's interesting, but my skills in these areas aren't anything like yours. So when I imagine, okay, so I'm going to be non-monogamous, and I'm going to reach out to multiple people, and I'm going to establish relationships. I'm going to perceive myself as less, I don't want to say competent, that's too strong a word, less familiar with what I'm likely to run up against if I'm like, okay, yeah, let's have an attached relationship. Let's see what it's like to have a two-way attachment connection. I don't necessarily know what's going to come up.
Well, and none of us really do, because every relationship is so different.
Yeah, right.
They're all
two
so
individuals,
distinct.
Unique individuals.
But what about the question of, you know, what does it mean? What does it mean to you to have an attachment-based relationship? You know, a lot of people imagine that everyone, like if you are a person who really wants to build a lot of secure attachment connection, then you may imagine that everybody wants that. But in fact, lots of people are actually looking for a casual connection. So there may be a whole group of people who are listening to this particular podcast and thinking, well, actually, I want my non-monogamy to be more based around one person who I have an attachment-based relationship. And then our other connections, and they might say this part quietly because they might feel a little shamed in the non-monogamous world. I don't want to connect to other people in an attachment-based way. The other connections I want to be more just sexual. And so those people might align more with the label of swinger or polysexual or open relationship. And they might put some boundaries and limits on their emotional availability to other people. But I can't know that unless I have to be patient and let people explain to me how they do their non-monogamy. I can't just guess that, even if they use the label. Because I've had plenty of relationships with people who tell me that they're polyamorous. I could make the presumption that just in the word they're open to many loves, that they're available for love. Now, I think of love as being connected to your attachment basis, to really deeply connecting and counting on someone. Lots of people experience, like they use that label polyamory and but they really aren't available for that because they're practicing monogamy or social monogamy in so much of their life that they're not available to meet those emotional connection needs.
And so do you feel, so you were just describing, okay, yeah, so I've got a relationship and I'm thinking, yeah, this is a love-based relationship. Do you think of that as the same as an attachment relationship, or related, or like what's the overlap? What's the Venn diagram between love and attachment?
I think that's a super personal question, but I think, you know, for me, when I am available to love people, even if they aren't available to love me, that's my personal stance. Like, it's none of my business whether they love me back. I decide to move in the world in love. And for me, I can then decide whether I'm going to provide that secure basis for someone, whether I'm going to show up for them emotionally. But unless they are willing to commit that to me through the act of negotiating and making agreements and showing up over time, my experience is lots of people will say the words that I love you or I care about you and then not have the bandwidth to actually do those things, or even harder, not be able to do them in a way that I can receive. Like, their version of providing that level of support might not line up with what my embodied psyche actually needs.
Yep.
And so I don't, even the word love doesn't tell me enough
Yeah.
This is why I count on agreements and renegotiating and reimagining agreements over time to help me understand, like, what are we doing together? What are we co-creating right now? And does it meet the needs that we each have, rather than just assuming that the word love or the word polyamory is automatically incurring this set of attachment based connections.
And that both people involved in this particular dyad have the same mental picture of what that even means.
Yeah.
So we have all these attachment styles, and we're talking about them like, okay, this is how I approach the world. And of course, we're very resilient, flexible, adaptable humans. And of course, it's a useful model that doesn't really capture the complexity of humans. So in a relationship, then, in non-monogamy in particular, would you say that a person with multiple relationships is going to be like floating around in the attachment space from, you know, they have one level of attachment in this relationship, one in this, one particular set of strategies with this partner, different strategies for another one?
Well, you're touching on something that I think it's core to the way I work with attachment. I don't think we should decontextualize our attachment. When I am experiencing myself as having, let's shift away from saying style, right? Because a style might feel, or a label, I might say like, hey, this is something I catch people doing. They say, I'm an avoidant dismissive.
Okay.
Or mm-hmm. I'm an anxious preoccupied. They put the definitive article there, Anne, in front of it, and they claim it like a label. And they're like, so this is me. And now they start to identify with it. I'm going to ask you, and I would ask anybody who's working with me to treat that label as information and not to wear it like a badge, not to put it on as a full identity. And here's why. In different contexts, you may actually test differently. You may wind up like the different metrics, even the ones that are validated, the different psychometrics that are well validated and used in the clinical setting. I need to know the context in which I am asking you these questions. So if I feel like I've lost the thread of your question a little bit, but when.
Well, no, not at all, because I was asking about like switching around, literally. No, you're answering it directly, because I was asking about switching around your attachment strategies, or, you know, whatever you want to call them, between
That's it.
Relationships.
And so let's talk about the strategies. If an attachment, if I am showing up with attachment issues, right? Let's say I am experiencing anxiety, I'm experiencing a level of desire to cling and pull at you in the context of this particular relationship. But then I have this other relationship. So I was dating somebody this past fall who I didn't feel any of that. If anything, I was exhibiting avoidant tendencies. And now I have in the past gotten the label put on me as disorganized attachment. I feel no shame about that. I was raised in a household with lots of trauma and troubles. My parents were doing the best they could, and it was not great. But so disorganized is the one that people often tend to feel a little like, oh my gosh, how do I fix that? I don't need to fix it. I do want to learn better strategies. But yes, I have the capacity to behave in both anxious ways and avoidant ways. I also have the capacity to behave in secure ways. But depending on the context of the specific relationship, different aspects of me are going to be awoken. So when I am interacting with someone who maybe they're very anxious themselves, that may actually, I may feel a compulsion to actually push away, to create distance. I may start leaning into avoidant tendencies. I may start making more space and not responding. There's a lot of ways that I might then sort of polarize myself in opposition to what they're exhibiting. Other times I might match right up. So if somebody's exhibiting a lot of avoidance, I might too. I might use the strategy of like, oh, they're really backed off. They're not terribly emotionally available. So me too. I'm going to match their energy. Mm-hmm. it's not for anyone to say which is the right way, like what's right for you to do. We need to look at the whole picture of what it is. What are you setting out to create in this relational life you have? And when we're talking about non-monogamy, we're talking about multiple relationships or multiple potentials for relationship, because you may not have multiple relationships going on right now, but in the context of your relational life, which strategies are you using? Which ones are you using unconsciously? They're just happening. You're not intentionally saying, oh, you know what? They're kind of backed off, so I'll be kind of backed off. What's just happening? Your response, you open up a dating app. What's happening in your body? Are you being hypervigilant? Are you people-pleasing? Are you leaning in a lot? Or are you actually relaxed and approaching this from a place of a relatively secure in yourself spot? Like, are you tending to your emotions, tending to your soma, your felt sense? I need to understand that I have the capacity to act in any of these ways. Any of these labels might look like they fit me in any particular context. And then if I add in, like, what's my current stress situation? How full is my threat bucket? How much nervous system regulation do I have access to right now?
Yeah. That, like all you of said, these things it's will so impact. Contextual. It will impact it.
Yeah. And so I just to finish that thought, if I contextualize attachment, then I can remind myself too that it's not something that I achieve. And I say, like, oh, good. I tested. Boom. I got secure attachment. So now I'm in the good box. So if there's a quadrant, right, of the four attachment styles, if I get a score, if I get a quiz to tell me that I'm secure, then I'm the good one. Because I see people weaponize that all the time. Now it's my partner who's got an insecure style, and they must be the problem. They have the problems. I really don't see how this is a productive move. And I think most people get that when they see it on the outside, but I see, like, we do it on the inside where there's this tendency to, oh, good, I got to that secure attachment, whether that was secure attachment because you had a relatively stable childhood, or whether that was earned secure attachment that you achieved through healing relationships, connective relationships that allowed you to build a secure sense of self and a secure sense of safety in relationship, whichever way. You don't just get there, check the box, and be like, great, I got my secure card. I'm in the cool kids club now.
I can stop thinking about that.
And you're a great example of that. You're a fantastic example. I remember back when we got together romantically, I asked you to take an attachment-based quiz. And I was pretty sure where I would wind up. And I was consistently turning up disorganized attachment back then. And you were turning up secure attachment. Over and over and over again. I was going to school, so I would put this metric in front of you or that metric in front of you, whatever. And you would get secure, secure, secure. But I happen to know that you did another one just last week. What'd you get?
I got disorganized and avoidant.
And I got secure. Like super secure. Like I got all the way down in the very corner of the one from the attachment project. I got like 1-1, baby, like super secure, especially in the context of this particular nesting partnership that I have. I'm not going to rest on my laurels. That is because right now at this point in my life, with the rest of my life situated the way it is, and you behaving the way you happen to be right now, and the rest of my dating world the way that it is right now, I feel very comfortable. And it was easy to give answers that popped this secure result back out.
And here we go. So I have a little story analysis to tell. This might take a minute or two. You just described me as, okay, I tested secure, like, what is that now? 12 years ago?
Yeah,
13
like,
years ago.
We're talking like, right? 14, 13, 12, you know, right up through, I would say 6 or 7 years ago.
And we're talking, and I got secure, and we're talking about the stigma of the different,
of an insecure attachment style.
And so I got secure, which, like, yay, right? Hooray. Okay. And now we come to now, and I'm more disorganized,
or you're returning a result of more
returning a result. Okay. All right. Now, when we first got together, how much of an optimist was I?
Oh God, it was sickening.
And here's the question.
I mean, it's sweet, but
no, it was, how effective was that? How good a strategy was that for the life that I was living?
Well, you were trying to live a pretty complicated life where you had two partners living with you actively and who had stopped getting along. Those two partners were no longer getting along. So
assuming things were just going to work out, did not work out. Okay. And we had explicit conversations about optimism. And you?
Pessimist. Big old pessimist.
Looking for hazards, hazard detecting.
All the time.
All the time.
I like to think I'm a realist, but realistically, I'm a pessimist.
Realistically. Yeah. Okay. So over the years then, you have developed skills and developed habits and strategies that now when you take these quizzes, these surveys, you come out on the secure side with in the context of our relationship.
Yeah.
And because you have, and this is okay, now here's me just going completely off the cuff. You have learned over time that you don't have to be so pessimistic. You don't have to be watching all the time for what goes wrong. And that has worked
in this relationship.
In this relationship. And as a result, you feel more secure.
Yeah, I would say that's true.
I learned that my optimism just wasn't working. It wasn't getting me what I wanted. So I started to be more cautious. Which is, it's not a complete synonym, but it's pretty close to anxious. Like, oh, is this going to work? I better think about this. I better really dig into this. I have been spending those 12 years working on those skills. And so from secure, now I get disorganized, anxious, fearful, avoidant. Yeah, I got my eyes open. I'm looking around. This is not... I don't feel at all bad. I'm like, oh, good. I needed that. I needed to start looking for what wasn't working.
Okay. So you know how the other thing that we talk about is individuation?
Yeah.
What it sounds like to me is you're describing someone who is now bringing unconscious material forward. So rather than an unconscious, blithful optimism where you're just like, yeah, I had a basically happy childhood and, you know, my relationships are stable. You have a lot of privilege. So you're pretty stable in your just general life and life is likely to work out for you. Now you're aware and you've started bringing that unconscious material into conscious awareness, which is disruptive.
Yeah.
Individuation is not a path of comfort.
Oh, no.
It is a path of disrupting your immature ideas of perfection and unfinishedness. But there's a kind of wholeness, the wholeness where we have in utero, where we are just subsumed in the archetypal layer. We don't have to do anything. We just exist. That is a different kind of wholeness from the kind you are striving for. And I watch you strive for now, where you have to notice where you are disappointing people, where you are letting yourself down, where you're breaking agreements, where
and
you
that are... was going to be the last piece of my analysis is all of those things were true. And also I started to take into account more seriously how I was impacting the people around me because I didn't so much. And as I did, I realized, I've never been the most socially smooth person. I've always felt awkward and like I didn't totally understand people, which I think was mostly laziness. And so I started to pay attention and I started to feel very uncomfortable. Like, oh, how am I going to actually notice after 40 something years of not paying attention? Now I'm going to start paying attention. This is hard. So I started to take people into account. It required a lot of attention. I couldn't just be like, "That's going to be fine." I had to pay attention. So, yes, so in the context of non-monogamy, all the attachment styles are effective.
Right. You could be operating with the strategies of any of those.
Yep.
Or you could have returned a label of any of those from a quiz and still successfully participate in non-monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel very strongly about this.
Me too.
I also think that what you just described is an uplifting story. It is an optimistic story of what it is to wake up to, oh, I didn't know what I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we feel secure because we just have no idea that there's danger out there. We have no idea that things can go wrong. And we don't know enough about attachment style yet to be making some of the bold claims that I see people make. Like, if you heal your attachment style, your relational life will be wonderful. Like, I think that's overstatement. I think attachment work is really important. I think we should lean into it and do that work. I think building attachment-based relationships is delicious and lovely. I personally really, really enjoy doing that. And I enjoy doing it with multiple people. But we don't have enough research about this model of relating that was first derived out of the infant mother connection specifically, and then applied to infant parent. We've kind of made the leap to, like, okay, more caregivers, and then made the leap to, okay, now we're going to transfer this particular model and say that it also occurs in our romantic relationships. Okay. It's also all based on the premise of monogamy. And specifically, it is unconsciously based on that premise. The originators of this theory were not thinking, gee, you know, I wonder how our monogamous worldview impacts our vision of how attachment works. Or for that matter, our white patriarchal cisgender mononormative system as a whole, right? How does it impact it? Because if you lived in another kind of culture, your caretaking, your caregiving, that would all look very different. So attachment theory, like trying to get it to just fit neatly onto our adult relationships that we have right now is already a stretch for me, even if we're in monogamy. But now take that, leave monogamy and say, okay, now I want to apply attachment theory and I want to be non-monogamous. I'm going to practice non-monogamy. We do not have the data to support the idea that this is a perfect fit. And we're going to need to do a lot more work. And I'm grateful for the work that is out there talking about, if you're currently experiencing anxious attachment tendencies, if you're operating from those patterns, okay, what might you do? So PolySecure is a great reference for that. If you are exhibiting tendencies of avoidance, what should I do? Like, we need to know this, but then we also have to think about what happens if I am trying to break down and dismantle for myself the idea that I need to have all of my relationships be attachment-based relationships, or that I need to have one. And if I don't have one attachment-based relationship, or what if I want my attachment-based relationship to be to myself? And that is actually, that's in the Hearts model in Jessica's book, like the idea of attachment to self, but that doesn't, like, I don't know. How do I do that? How do I attach to myself? We don't have, you know, decades of research saying, here's exactly how you would attach to yourself. But we do have philosophical and spiritual practices that can potentially support that. We do have psychological research that says that we can support ourselves. But I am hesitant to say that we can just automatically apply the rules of the road of attachment theory without also taking a really close look at the reality that non-monogamy is a completely different paradigm. And it may upend some of our assumptions and presumptions about how attachment functions in our adult relationships. And what if we instead talk about connection and talk about the different kinds of connection we want to have? And what if we start really doing some, I would love to see more research on what happens if my connection sources are diverse and flowing? What if I don't have a primary attachment figure?
Yeah. If attachment theory ends up having some basis, some established basis in a non-monogamous context, we may find multiple other attachment styles that resolve out of this situation.
Right. I just don't think we know enough yet to be so fixed. And that's what I would warn. It's the only, I think attachment style work can be really helpful. But when people pick up their label and they over-identify with it, we can fall into a fixed mindset and imagine that now my partner needs to behave in certain ways that accommodates my attachment style. And they might not be available for that. They might not be able to do that. It also, it presents this idea that some outside authority is going to label you versus you understanding yourself more deeply, right? So I would say, take the quizzes, enjoy them, read all the attachment-based work that you want to, but then look closely, see if you can see yourself. Can you engage in that dialogue with the material that says, oh, I see where my patterns, I see where I keep acting out this set of patterns with this particular partnership, or I see how in a past relationship, I mean, I had a friendship once where I was acting out so much anxious attachment. It was so intense and it was a friendship. It was a platonic friendship. My anxious tendencies were so intense that I could barely function. And we had not negotiated to have an attachment-based relationship. So if I looked there and then simultaneously, I had other partnerships where I was exhibiting very different patterns. It was really confusing to me. I didn't know what to ask for because the literature seemed to point me at the idea that, okay, so if you are exhibiting this anxious tendency, fix that. Address that. But I was exhibiting different, all these different tendencies in different contexts. So it only confused me further. And over the course of time, I've come to realize that I have to think about all of this contextually and I have to allow myself to be the authority about what labels are put on me.
Yeah.
And not give that away. And especially not give that away to partnerships. I would not want you labeling me. I wouldn't want any of my other partners labeling me. So some of the things we can do about this are, and this is an action step we can all take, is we can move away from identifying as an avoidant dismissive or an organized, an avoidant preoccupied, like take that out. But we can also just bring this gentleness into our language where we shift away from talking about my attachment style or my partner's attachment style and labeling them and just shift into like, I'm seeing, it feels like we're in a pattern of avoidance right here. It feels like I am practicing this avoidant dismissive pattern that I see laid out very neatly in these descriptions in these books. It feels like that's what I'm playing out right now. And just the gentleness of like, oh, I feel like this is how I'm enacting my relationships. That leaves room for me to actually experience change and relatively quickly.
It provides just a window into yourself. It doesn't, like we tend to jump to meaning, assigning meaning. But if I look at myself and I did it with my disorganized attachment
quiz results.
So let me look at that. That's all it's for. It's not to say I'm a good or bad person or that this is what I do all the time. It just gives me, it might be helpful to look at my behavior, looking for these patterns. And if I find them, I might like them. I might want to keep using them, or I might decide, no, actually that doesn't work for me. But knowing myself first.
Right. And so if we use the attachment theory labels as a way to gain more self-awareness, I am very pro that. But if we solidify our position and say like, oh, this is me and I'll, your attachment style is not fixed. You get to shift it over time. You get to do the work. So I now return a result consistently of secure. That's through a lot of work. That's through an immense amount of psychological work. I've done multiple Jungian analyses. I've done years of therapy. I've also done so much deep work on myself. It didn't come easily. So I actually get a little resistant. I get frustrated when I get my results back from one of these quizzes and they say like, oh, you have enjoyed a secure and stable childhood. And I'm like, fuck you. No, I did not.
Yeah.
No, I did not. That is not the only way to get this result. Yeah. And so if anybody out there is frustrated and is listening to this episode because you've been frustrated by the way that this theory fits and doesn't fit, yeah, join the club. Like, mm-hmm. join the club. And I think we can all learn to contextualize this theory, learn to look at it like, okay, in the framework of this particular phase of my life, at this stage of my development, and in this particular relationship, how am I showing up? And that's where the quizzes, I think, can be useful. And so I'll even use a quiz from a super mononormative book, the book Attached. There's a quiz based there. And it's entirely about like, how do you perceive your partner's attachment style and how do you perceive yours in this particular relationship? It's incredibly mononormative. And I'll use that just as a self-awareness exercise of like, okay, in this particular relationship, if I can get my imagination, it's like, yes, okay, I'm thinking about that relationship. Cool. That test can give me information, but let's please not like make these laminated. Like, yeah. Let's not laminate this to us.
Right.
Let's allow ourselves the benefit of being much more complex than that. So, okay, I can get off my attachment soapbox. I am not throwing out attachment theory at all. I like attachment theory, but I want us to take a really nuanced and careful approach to it. And for anyone out there who is doing clinical work and is thinking about clinical research, oh, I would be so supportive of you taking on more attachment-based research in the context of non-monogamy. We'd be cheering you on.
100%. Yep.
Let's get that out there. Get that done. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks.
We talk to you all the time. It is absolutely imperative to me that we get to hear from you as well.
Yes, please.
So we'd love to invite you to join us. Join Ken and I. We're holding monthly Ask Me Anythings. You can show up, bring your questions from podcast episodes, from your relationships, bring questions about non-monogamy, about individuation, about relationship skills. We would love to share space with you. We're hosting these AMAs free of charge for our podcast listeners. You are the Playing with Fire community, and it matters a ton to us that we connect with you directly. So,
I would so love to hear your questions, and oh, it'd be so awesome.
Yeah. Go to joliehamilton.com/AMA, and you'll find a way to sign up real quick and get an invitation to join us in a small group where we're going to get together and talk about all things non-monogamy, individuation, and relationships.